Your name?
I'm Rosemary Cotting.
Your profession?
I'm a health educator.
And Rosemary Cotting, we're here in your Falls Church Healthcare Center. It's a privilege to join you here. Why don't we begin by talking about this center?
I'd be glad to. Thank you, Peter. This is a Pro-Choices GYN center. We're a comprehensive OB-GYN center. We see all ages from menopause down through teenagers. And we provide services as a community-based center for women with insurance as well as uninsured women, with the commitment that all women deserve dignity in their health care, have a right to be heard for the issues that concern them, and we will welcome them all as patients.
You're the founder and director of this center. Why did you start it?
Well, I started it because the Falls Church community had been well served by another pro-choice GYN center called Commonwealth Women's Center. And Commonwealth Women's Center closed in 2001, and I thought it stranded the women in Falls Church. And I felt that it was important, since Falls Church had supported pro-choice medicine for, 30-some years, that they deserved having a quality center here to continue to serve their women.
Is it difficult to be a pro-choice health center in Virginia?
That's an understatement, yes. Very, very difficult. For some reason, pro-choice medicine has been attacked since Roe v. Wade days. The worst attack, of course, came with the Hyde Amendment just 3 years after Roe v. Wade, where it limited the opportunity for women to use full comprehensive health care, receive full comprehensive health care with their insurance if they were employees from federal government. That included our military. I think it's the greatest shame that this country can bear on its shoulders is that our military families, men and women, cannot get full comprehensive health care, could not up until President Obama changed some of those regulations just 2 years ago. I think it's the greatest shame that we as a country bear. We're asking people to fight for us and protect our freedoms, and we don't offer our military the same freedoms that other women have. Just a shame.
I wanted to read a little bit from a recent article in the Sunday Washington Post entitled "Abortion Providers Wary of New Law." Quote, "Before Rosemary Cotting allows visitors into the Falls Church Healthcare Center, a self-described pro-choice women's center, she asks them to sign a confidentiality agreement and show a photo ID because, she says matter-of-factly, there's all kinds of shenanigans when it comes to abortion. As a veteran abortion rights activist and founder and director of this center, she has beaten back attempts to zone her out of existence and found plumbers and HVAC workers to replace the ones she says were harassed away by round-the-clock protests outside her door. Over the years, she has complied with every new requirement, the 24-hour wait before a woman has an abortion, parental notification for minors, notarized parental consent for minors, and she makes sure all would-be patients have state-mandated information about alternatives to abortion." I want to stop there and get your response.
Well, I think that's a pretty accurate summary of what hurdles one has to do when you ask about what are the challenges for having a pro-choice GYN center. I think those are the challenges. You are singled out, a cardiologist, a plastic surgeon, endoscopic surgeries. They are not singled out. I have no problem with regulations that really will help women and their families have assured good health. But if you're going to make regulations for simple surgeries, it needs to be across the board, and it needs to be applied fairly to all medical services that might be considered in-office surgeries, such as our aspiration D&C, which is the medical procedure used for abortion care.
Continuing with the article, quote, "But when the General Assembly, Virginia's General Assembly, passed legislation late last week requiring all offices, clinics, and centers like hers, like yours, that perform first trimester abortions to be regulated as hospitals, arguably the strictest requirement in the country. Cotting turned so red that she went into one of the clinic's exam rooms and checked her own blood pressure.
And it wasn't that high. It was just that I was flushed. I was pleased. I think it was 134 over 80, which is a little higher for me but than usual, which isn't a bad blood pressure for someone that's 68. So,
talk about this legislation that the General Assembly has passed and what it may mean for pro-choice health care providers.
Well, this type of legislation is referred to as TRAP laws, Targeted Regulations for Abortion Providers, TRAP. So it's TRAP legislation. They've been offering these kind of legislative laws coming through the Senate or the House in Virginia for probably 20, 25 years. And they're always beaten back because they do not ensure safer care for women. And but this year, even though they were introduced in the right way and were beaten back again, it was snuck in as a last-minute amendment to an already passed nursing home bill. And I think that's what insulted me and in a way makes me feel bad for my patients as much as anything, is as it was snuck in without hearing, without public hearing, without any advance notice, into a bill that has already passed, and a non-germane bill, a bill that had to do with nursing home regulations. And so I was just floored. The state has done a very, very good job. The Board of Health, the Medical Board have all done an amazing job of protecting women's and their and all patients' health, as a matter of fact. It's just been we should be very proud of what they've done. And I really have to trust that same kind of common sense, will this help women get good health care? Is it applied equally to all services that in-office services that may indeed include some kind of surgery, such as an endoscopy or a plastic surgery, even dental care? And if it does, then of course, and these professionals feel that it's going to improve healthcare, then of course we will be happy to support it. But if it doesn't, and if it's just targeted regulations to us because we're pro-choice, then indeed it's not going to be something that I will support, nor will women across this this Commonwealth.
On the point of you mentioning that. Well, you submitted written testimony to a committee before the Virginia State Assembly, mm-hmm. where this legislation was being taken up, and the legislation didn't make it out. And you're saying they went a backdoor route to get it passed. And the Washington Post editorialized on Wednesday, March 2nd, Virginia's abortion end run, mischief, not public health, drives the push for new regulation. I want to read a few sentences and get your response. Principled opponents of abortion have options to reduce the number of unwanted pregnancies, including broadening access to contraception, promoting adoption, and pushing abstinence-focused education. But Republicans in the Virginia General Assembly, with the help of two anti-abortion Democratic state senators, have taken a different tack. Through the use of legislative gimmickry, an amendment slipped onto a bill unrelated to abortion. They have pushed through a divisive measure that is unlikely to reduce the number of abortions performed in the Commonwealth, but which may eventually force some of the state's 21 abortion clinics to close if it survives court challenges. The bill, which Governor Robert McDonald says he will sign, reclassifies health centers that perform abortions as hospitals, thereby making them subject to state regulations. Your response?
Well, repeating what I said, and when regs are focused on the broad office-based surgery category, they tend to be far more health and safety-oriented rather than politically motivated. And from a strategy perspective, we have allies here in Virginia that will help keep health and safety focused and not other agendas that are not related to health and safety. The regulations are existing on the on the books right now in Virginia really do apply to hospitals. And there are also application, it also applies to surgery centers. So there are two, those are two. There are two other types of regulations that affect medical care as well. My fear is that they're going to form another type of regulation that targets only pro-choice medicine centers, like health centers like us. And I think that's totally inappropriate. And the whole key is to trying to understand that we as an individual, our, my patients as individuals, their husbands, their daughters, their mothers, they have the power, and it's through the ballot box, and they have to do that. If they don't want all of this money being wasted on unneeded regulations and on the studies that are necessary for us to get these regulations put into effect, you have to exercise your voice, and you have to fight back a little bit.
In founding this health center, you knocked down the walls because from the post, the quote, you said, I live in a state where there's an earthquake around abortion, so I had to build a center that could withstand whatever came down the road. Talk about the steps you've had to take over and above what you would have, maybe if you were in another state that had a different view on pro-choice health clinics.
Well, you've walked through the center, Peter. What do you think of our center?
It's beautiful, and but as you showed me, one of the operating rooms, it's much larger than maybe it would need to be. Mm-hmm. It's obviously a very warm and a beautiful place.
Thank you. We think so, too. You can see it on our website, too, the full line of the rooms and everything. Well, this was an old library, a George Mason University library. And, of course, it would not have been well-suited the way it was structured for medical offices, so we found it was just going to be easier just to take all the walls out. So we took everything out and devised a comfortable center with a very large waiting room and with private doctor's offices and private health education offices to chat with patients in. And then took, at that time, the Class II hospital regulations that Virginia had and gave them to the architect and asked him to design a facility that would meet those guidelines in the Class II hospital regulation, Virginia's Class II hospitals. And so that's why you have that immense large room, because they require one, I forget what it is, 18 by 15 or something like that. And then they also give other specs for the size of the hallways and variety of other things. And we tried to architecturally meet all of that at that time. And that was hard. That was hard. It was not easy because it is a limited space. And so you had to figure out how you can accomplish your mission, be welcoming, and still meet some of the requirements, even if I didn't need to meet them, which I didn't.
What will be the impact on Virginia's other pro-choice healthcare providers, and what will additional costs be incurred here as well?
Answering your last question, well, first I'll say this. We don't know what the Board of Medicine is going to do, or the Board of Health. As I said before, they are fair-minded, they're professional, they're medical-based. They understand these things, and I trust in them and pray each day that their wisdom and professionalism will get over this issue. But if they are indeed modeled after what is already existing here for Virginia, for our center, it'd probably be in excess of $100,000. Whether or not we can meet that and in order to continue to provide abortion services, aspiration DNCs after miscarriages, to do some of the other abnormal PAP and abnormal health services that we provide, will be have to be considered, but the practice will stay because we are a very active GYN practice. So it won't. We won't need to close, and hopefully, I hope we won't be able to need to change our mission either. In relationship to other centers, we have a Planned Parenthood just three blocks down from us. They would not be able to retrofit their building. I'm fairly sure. And women would lose a really important source of health care if a Planned Parenthood could not serve people here. I think there are two or three centers in the Alexandria area. I don't think they would all both have to be retrofitted. I don't know if they have an angel that can help them, but I imagine that their fees, that their costs would be astronomical. We have a center. There is a center in Manassas. By we, I mean the pro-choice mission healthcare groups that are throughout Northern Virginia. There is a one in Manassas. That's a very creative director and owner of that center. She has fought things all her life for 30 years to try to keep that center open. I think she'd find a way. And then there's one in Virginia, in Fairfax, and that's a pretty large center like ours, and I think they'd be able to manage too. So, and then there's all through the state, there are others, and there are doctor's offices that aren't even in that 21 category that provide abortion services, certainly more than five a month, and they will be affected as well.
How important is it for women to have access to abortion providers? I'm guessing, you know, you devoted, it's not easy to provide this. And maybe you can talk about some of the protests that you've endured throughout the years. But to be able to go through that speaks to, I guess, the commitment you have, and why is it important for women to have access to abortion care?
A very thoughtful question, and it's difficult to answer. The main reason you, number one, do something that you know is important to the overall health and character of the country is because you know it's important to the overall character and health of the country. If we have a healthy population, they are more contributory. They can help this country grow and help it be stronger. If your population is unhealthy, gets unhealthy medical services, are injured, having to deal with failed contraception, unintended pregnancies that they've been working hard not to have, what does that do to the rest of their family? What does that do to their own ability to contribute to the country? That's a big, broad-based sociological answer. And as a Quaker heritage, I'm tasked by my Lord to act on my beliefs. And that's why this is a faith-based center, and why we have a faith-based perspective on reproductive health and reproductive justice. And so that's my personal commitment. The reality is, just on a simple one-to-one basis, you know, your interviews are focusing on the individual, and I think it was really important for you to understand that this is individual too. For a patient that comes here with an unintended pregnancy, she deserves to have the very best care. She deserves to be treated with respect. She deserves to have her decision honored. And that, on a one-to-one basis, is why you do that. And you select staff that believe that. I'm lucky enough to have two wonderful doctors that believe that. And those are very important things. So, from the broad social perspective all the way down to this patient that I'm seeing right now today, that's why it's important.
And regarding the protests, visitors, as the Washington Post piece pointed out, and come in and sign, like I did, sign a piece of paper, you have to be careful about who comes in. And we're speaking at a time when Planned Parenthood is under attack, following Acorn being under attack, you're subjected to protests. But I wonder if you had any comment about what's going on with Planned Parenthood at the national level right now.
Not really. To be very honest, I don't follow it that closely in the legislature. I do know that, again, it is just as bad as any of these targeted regulations that are coming through the federal government to defund Planned Parenthood. I'm so glad that there was this wonderful walk last weekend, and we had all across the country so many people coming in, speaking out, and talking to their Congress through the demonstrations, because Planned Parenthood is one of the most essential things for reproductive rights we probably have. As a businesswoman, of course, they're my competition, but they are essential to the wellness of this country and to full reproductive health, and they do a wonderful job of it, and they have been for years and years and years.
Any final thoughts that you want to share as what we're seeing nationally with what Planned Parenthood's going on? We're seeing as well locally in Virginia with what's taking place with the Virginia State Assembly. But as you're saying, the Board of Health has a significant decision to see how it does or doesn't move forward on those on that legislation. Any final thoughts you want to share, Rosemary Cotting?
Well, Peter, one of the things that made me want to do this interview is because you tried to represent an individual's perspective in an era where big national news sound bites are seeming to be what forms so much opinion. And I think this is really an important thing that you're doing. I alluded to earlier in our conversation about how where the power can be and where you can fight back. And I'm not too sure if you're aware or the people that will be listening to this interview are aware that in this last election, General Assembly election in Virginia, we had 13% of the registered voters. That doesn't even represent all of those who could have voted. But we have had 13%, approximately 13% of the registered voters come out and vote in that election. That means that maybe 8% designed the composition of the state senate and the state legislature. And that is the state legislature that snuck this in. That means 8% of this population, if we want to spread it out to the whole population, is deciding for the other 92%. And if that's what people want, if they want 8% of the people to shape their lives and make decisions for them, then they should just continue to stay home on election day. They should continue not to send donations to people that are running for office who represent their interests. And then we will continue having 8% of the population deciding for the other 92% of us. And so that I think is the best lesson you can learn. And if you don't think that your vote makes a difference, then just continue staying home or continue saying that nobody listens to you and I'm not going to vote. And then indeed other people will make the choices for you.
I find that very striking that here we are talking about a women's health center and you're talking about electoral politics. I guess the protection that can come from what takes place at centers like this cannot happen, I suppose, if people aren't involved in many aspects in civil society, it seems.
Oh, I think you said it exactly right. You know, we don't live in an island, we just have to understand that what happens to me, I've made a choice to let it happen. And it's not those folks in Washington. It's not those folks in Richmond. It is us. We sent those people or chose not to send those people. And that's the reality of it is everything is politics in a lot of ways because this is where our funding comes from This is where your legislation comes from. We used to think that, I used to be a Republican. That used to be very interesting. You would find that very interesting. We were very active Republicans in Virginia, for my husband and I, for many, many, many years, because they recognized the independence and the self-worth of the individual. And they recognized that government shouldn't be intruding into individual decisions. Well, man, we don't have that kind of Republican Party anymore. It's totally, totally reversed. And the people that are most invasive into our daily lives are indeed the Republicans. They want to tell us what medicines we can and can't use, where we can get it from, what happens in our home and in our bedroom, and what happens with our bodies. And all of these are legislations that are coming through that. And it's not just legislature, Peter. When you elect an elected, you have an official elected, that elected official then appoints judges. So now you have the court system, the executive branch, as well as the legislative branch, all tied together and affecting our lives day to day. And so, of course, it's political.
Thanks so much, Rosemary Cotting. It's a privilege to be able to join you in this Pro-Choice Women's Health Center.
Thank you very much, and I wish you the most success with your journalism. I think you're a brilliant young man, and I'm very happy for you, even if you do come from New York.